Welcome to the Smart Thinking Podcast. I'm your host, Ted Knightsky. Thank you for joining us today for this extended podcast, which is an interview I had with Senator Lena Taylor earlier in the summer of 2017 at her district office in Milwaukee. Senator Taylor is only the 20th female elected senator in the state's history, the 5th African-American senator in the state's history, and only the 2nd African-American woman. Her journey and conversation that we will share in this podcast is one of great interest. Please enjoy today's podcast, and also feel free to share this on your social media platform. And if you're interested in learning further ways in which to advance the leadership of women in the state of Wisconsin, please check out the CESA 6 website, search for Women Leading Wisconsin, and join us at the conference we'll be having this spring to greater advance the cause of women in leadership. Thank you for joining the Smart Thinking Podcast, and enjoy this conversation. Topic and guest is Senator Lena Taylor from Milwaukee, who is a mother, lawyer, lawmaker, and advocate, and happens to represent the area in which I was born on Carmen Avenue here in Milwaukee. So welcome to the podcast, Senator Taylor.
Why, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be with you. And I also am a product of Wisconsin, Milwaukee's public schools.
Awesome.
Yes, I am.
So what we're going to talk about today is we want to learn all about you and your passion points, and as we did the research and have seen you in action in Milwaukee and in Madison, you know, it's very impressive your amount of passion and the empathy you display for the people you represent and then how you advocate for them. And even, you know, people don't know, we're coming from your office in your district here in Milwaukee, and I've been sitting here watching people come in and out, and I've been in a lot of different senators and assembly people's offices, and I'll tell you, the one thing I've noticed that's very different than other parts of the state of Wisconsin is people coming in here both to help and for help, and
yes,
you don't really see that. And that's very impressive that you've built a culture here amongst your staff to support your constituents.
Thank you so much. As a matter of fact, it's the reason, because you're actually in my Milwaukee office, and most legislators do not have a district office. As a matter of fact, maybe only 7 of us, and maybe it may be down to 3. Have a district office. Now, they may do work in their district, but not a district office. And the reason it's important for me is being able to provide that workforce training ground for individuals. So you're very correct. You're very observant. I have individuals who are coming in my office, some of whom are volunteering, some of whom are on government assistance of some type and have a job subsidy. Some who are in a program and have a market value subsidy. And then some people who are students who are interning. So it really is a different flavor. And then we have individuals today, you happen to come, and we had a couple of secretaries coming, and we had people meeting with them in order for the secretaries to see the different work that they're doing and to see how we can make those connections happen. And so we surely see our office. My motto is, we're here to serve.
Yeah, and for those listening, 27th and Silver Spring, yep. Northwest side of Milwaukee is your district.
Yes.
And like I said, I mean, this is one of my favorite parts of Milwaukee because I can get everything from a Cops burger to play some soccer and everything in between. It's a very diverse.
Exactly. We got a soccer place over at Lincoln Park where yep. people play all the time, football, as they say.
Yes.
And you're right. We have just a lot. In the area, we have really a twist of suburban and in Milwaukee right here too, because we're at the border of Milwaukee and Glendale. So we kind of get a flavor of all of. We have a senior place and we have a medical facility not far away. So all just good stuff and some good food around here.
Yeah. So one of the things that you're often described at is passionate, and sometimes I think that's a double-edged kind of a compliment.
For sure.
Observing you, that is something where, and knowing your district and knowing mm-hmm. your area, I can see why you'd be a warrior for the people you represent. So tell us a little bit about where that came from. Like, where'd you grow up? What was your family like?
And so like you, I grew up in this district. I was born in this district, so to say, too. My family, my parents had an opportunity because of Alderwoman at the time, Vel Phillips, who fought for African-Americans, everyone to have fair housing in Milwaukee. They were able to buy a house pass Walnut and to buy a house in this area called where Capitol Drive is. Mm-hmm. And actually, it has been nicknamed Blackfish Bay for a very long time among people in my community. So I literally live on the block that I grew up on 15th and Capitol. So it's amazing to be able to be their senator. The people who tell you, girl, it's dark, go in the house, get out that street, I'm gonna tell your mama, is your daddy home from work yet? All of those things, that those are some of the very same people that are voting for me. It's one of the places that is most tender to me, to be able to say that I grew up in a district, that the block that I grew up on, the alley I played in, that my son plays basketball in the alley and has friends from that same block. So I grew up, and my passion comes from knowing that for me, very, very honestly, education is the key. I would never be a college graduate if I didn't get a high school diploma, if I did not get an education. And very candidly, I didn't want to go to college. My mother picked my school, my major, my counselor, my classes, my dorm room, my furniture, the driver in the car we were going in, the seat I was sitting in. I'm convinced she signed the application because I don't remember signing it. And even when we did the application, I didn't get accepted. So I know she said something to them too, mm-hmm. to get me on a probationary program. So my passion is really because I know that I would not be what I am without access to opportunity, without education, and without someone who is an advocate for me. And so I feel compelled. I feel to whom much is given, much is required. And I try to live my life in that way. So my passion is from knowing that, you know, only by the grace of God go I. You know, I could be just like my cousin. We were like white on rice. She is addicted to heroin, and that has been the path that she's on, and the struggle for her and her children because of the generational components that have happened in her world. I every day can see where I would be if I had not been able to be put on a path to get an education and do something different. So my passion is because I know it could be me, and more importantly, I know the story of the people that are that need just some help, guidance, connector, direction, and who need a voice. And so I try to use mine as effectively as I can.
How cool is that? And to have you know, in everyone's lives, everyone, you know, they always say, you know, you don't get to pick your family, but you get to.
Exactly.
But to have your empathy energized by the experiences around your family is just a cool thing. And the way you describe your mother.
Oh my gosh.
Have you looked in the mirror?
You know what?
I mean,
listen,
I said. She picked my school. Sounds an awful lot like the lady I see on television.
You know what's so funny? My mother named me after her. My father did, I should say. So my mother's name is Lena Taylor. And my name is Lena Taylor. And I always say, I'm nothing like the original. Because clearly, my mother raised a strong woman to be confident and to be a person who gives back. And I'm going to be honest with you, I learned to give back even to her, mm-hmm. because she did all of those things, and I wouldn't be the 1,000th senator, only the 20th girl in the history of the state to be a state senator, only the 5th African-American, and I like to say power to the people, and only the 2nd black girl to grace the Capitol. And I like to jokingly but seriously say with such beauty, brilliance, and fierceness, right? Because when I got out of law school, my mother was on drugs. She was on crack. And I used my law degree to take my brother from my mother so that he could get that educational background that she had given me and all of the other things she had given me. She's more than 16 years sober. I quit counting. And she helps people who are transitioning. About 20 to 30 people live with her.
Wow.
And she helps those people. She's better than me. I say it all the time because she lives her ministry, right, every day. So I can't forget, right? Mm-hmm. Every day I see the person that she took in who has HIV, who couldn't find anywhere else to go, and hug them and love them and share the Lord with them. And so very much, right, I am my mother's daughter.
Yeah.
You know, in every way.
Yeah, so the podcast actually started out with a metaphor about the differences between buffaloes and cows. And I'm just going to share
okay.
it with you really quick.
Okay.
So on the eastern range in Colorado, buffaloes, native buffaloes and cows have intermixed over the centuries. Okay. And they have two very different behaviors. And believe me, this is actually a compliment, but you're a buffalo.
Okay.
A buffalo and a cow, when a storm comes up over the Rocky Mountains, they have two very different behaviors. The cow starts to walk and then run away from the storm. And as a result, stays in the storm for a longer period of time, being more pessimistic and, oh, woe is me, kind of a mental behavior, and actually endures more pain as a result of their behavior of trying to outrun something that's inevitable.
That they can't run.
And a buffalo turns and looks at the storm and goes headlong into it.
Man.
To reduce the amount of pain, but take on that challenge with an optimistic attitude, like, you know what, it's going to hurt for a little bit, but let's overcome it.
Mm-hmm.
You're a buffalo. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's a cool thing.
I think you're right.
So tell me about high school. Where did you go to high school? When did you graduate?
I went to high school at Rufus King. As a matter of fact, I was in the first class when we turned into a college prep school. And it was my neighborhood school. And I remember when I was growing up, actually, I thought it was a prison because they had a huge, stadium, and they had a big brick,
wall, brick fence all
exactly
around,
around
it. When you come up upon it, it's a very large, strong looking building.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So they ultimately tore down the part of the stadium and all of those pieces. But when I was growing up, I was like, I never want to go there. So it's so funny that I ended up going to high school there. My uncle went to school there and I went to King, and I very candidly did not apply myself fully when I was in school and barely made it out of high school and didn't want to go to college. But I had a mama who said, oh, excuse me, you're not going to the service, you're going to college. And evidently had a talk with them too, because I got on probation and didn't get accepted at first. So I'm proud to be a King graduate. If I could be honest with you, some of my best friends and longest relationships have been with people that I went to high school with. A girlfriend of mine and I are going to going on a cruise and going to Cuba.
Oh, how fun will that?
Yes, exactly. And we went to King together. So King is, I'm still in the neighborhood. So yeah. I represent the school, which is also cool. And so much that I can think of. I immediately think of Miss Johnston. Miss Johnstone, who was the teacher who told me, you can do more and you can do better. And I'm not having it. You better start doing more. Her room was all the way at the fourth floor of the building. It was like a big old hike to go all the way up to her room. And she was like, not kidding with me, okay? And it was because of her that I would argue that I began to apply myself in a different way, because she saw something in me. And, you know, I'm certain everybody has that kind of teacher. She was my teacher who did that for me in high school. But I'll never forget Miss Stewart, who was my third grade teacher, who I was talking during the spelling test and gave me a U. I got in such trouble when I got home about that U. I think I have an issue about spelling to this day.
And for those listening who don't know what a U is, that's the old F.
Yes, exactly.
Unsatisfactory.
Exactly, exactly.
It was the 80s way of telling you, it'll be okay, but you're a failure.
Exactly, without giving you the big F or whatever. But it also taught me no talking during a spelling test. Now, some would say, I don't know if she learned her lesson, Miss Stewart. But Miss Stewart was huge, huge for me. And there are so many other teachers that I can think of. And the one teacher I want to tell you about that my mother made me take her class again, I've blocked her name because I want to tell you. But she taught a college ready, not really a college readiness, but sort of interpretation of when you read stuff. I can't remember.
Yeah.
And I got a D, and my mother was like, no, you're going to take it again, because I gave the teacher a hard time too. And she was like, no, you're going to take it again, because she has her high school diploma, you don't. And you're going to learn how to get what she has to give you. I was hot as a firecracker about that. But of course, you know, I took the class over and did better the second time and learned how to act like I needed to in the class.
But I think that goes to the point of one of the great things about public school teachers, all teachers, matter of factly, is when they do lay down the high expectations, you know, we all remember.
Kids rise to it.
Right. Everybody rises to the occasion, or they run.
That's true.
And if they run and they go home, and they're grabbed by the collar, and they have to reintroduce you to my son, right, Teddy here.
Exactly.
He's going to do what you asked him to do.
Exactly. That's which was my story.
Yeah. Sounds like you and I were cut from the same academic cloth. So tell me a little bit about one of your favorite memories of grade school when you were little.
One of my favorite memories of grade school was, this is going to seem really weird, right? But I remember going to E.L. Phillip. And I remember E.L. Phillip, it was two blocks from my house. Mm-hmm. And it felt like home to be at E.L. Phillip. I remember the love that existed in that building. And I also remember, which is so funny, I remember that my principal and a teacher seemed to like each other, and later they got married when we were out of school. But it was like, I knew it! I knew it when I was in third grade! Right. First, second, and third grade. We knew that they liked each other. Yeah. You know when a boy and a girl like each other. So that's one of my fond memories.
Lots of extra observations in that class.
Exactly. Well, you know, they weren't... She was a teacher, he was the principal, but it was never... but it was something that...
Everybody, you knew.
Yeah, you knew. Yeah. You knew. You knew.
So, and after that, went to middle school where?
I went to middle school at Hartford Avenue. And Hartford Avenue was in the east side, mm-hmm. Near UWM. And really, their campus is almost literally... Their school is almost literally on the UW
right.
campus,
right.
You know, for all intents and purposes. And I came in the... It seems like in the middle of the school year from, if it wasn't Phillip, it was 9th Street because it was Phillip probably. But either way it goes, went to Hartford and Mr. Liebel was my teacher in 5th grade. And then I went to Miss Scaris's class. And I remember that Miss Scaris, she must have had some kind of surgery, bypass surgery, because I remember that she couldn't eat much, and so we gave her, for a celebration, a bundle of celery with a ribbon around it. I remember this, and I loved Miss Garris. And then I remember Mr. Roventini was my 7th grade teacher, and Mr. Roventini was serious, and I can see him now, pulling his pants up with his arms on the side, and his pants were high, and he wore a belt.
Oh, man, and I hope all of my former students do very, very well. But if they tell the story
yeah, or something like
Mr.
that.
Yeah, I remember Mr. Nitzke pulling his socks up all the time.
And then I also remember Mr. Cummings, who probably, of all of my teachers, expanded my mind and my horizon to know that we could do more. He made going to college seem like it was just what was supposed to happen. We were near UWM, and he took us on. We probably could never do what Mr. Cummins did with us now. We went to visit UWM and did field trips all the time. He taught us independence in ways that was, you know, just amazing. And so I appreciate that.
I think one of the neatest things that students don't get is that we, as teachers and educators, we live vicariously through you.
Okay.
So I'm sure that all the men and women whose names you dropped, when they open the journal or turn on Channel 12 or whatnot, will say like, oh, I had Lena, you know, this is not a surprise to me.
Miss Johnstone came to my swearing in.
That is awesome.
When I got sworn in as a state senator, and she was in the balcony, and it was, I can't tell you how touching it was, because I'm telling you, I remember her, like, you know, almost like pulling me by the ear, girl, you gonna do better. Mm-hmm. And Miss Lavelle, I see her, my typing teacher, all the time in the community. Miss Lavelle was like, I can type today because of Miss Lavelle, because she made me. She made me.
Right.
She made me. Oh, and she was hard on us. But thank God, because she helped. That being hard on us is what gives us part of who we are.
Mm-hmm. And it's funny how we remember it that way. But as adults, we'd probably be like, yeah, that wasn't that
yeah,
big.
Yeah, it wasn't that big. Yeah, right. Now I'm like, thank God.
Yeah. When you're a kid and all you want is freedom.
Right.
And then somebody says.
It's like, oh, she's so cruel.
So what was your favorite, like, what was one of your favorite subjects?
Math.
Really?
Yes.
You're
oh, my gosh.
You like math.
Oh, my gosh. I would do math just for fun.
Wow.
I would just sit and do math problems just for fun. And I'll tell you what I also would do. I would play school.
Oh, really?
I would play school and be the teacher for the kids and, you know, and do math. Yes. And so that was my favorite subject. And I loved our neighborhood library, Atkinson Library. I would run and get a stack of books, and I would go home and read them and take them back in the same day.
That's awesome. So the librarians knew Little Lena, too.
They did. They did. They did.
That's fantastic. So you have recognized a lot of educators. You've told us a little bit about your family. But what are your educational goals for your son and for other family members that you have?
I always want individuals to get additional education, after K through 12. And I don't care what that looks like. I don't care if that's college or if that's technical college or if it's a skill and a certification. But I also want them to remember something that I'll never forget. There was a woman, 72, going to law school with me. 72. There was a woman that went to church with me. She was 80 when she got her GED. For me, education is always. It's always doing more to sharpen your mind.
Right.
It also helps you with dementia and those things also. So when you get done, it's about always feeding yourself, right? Knowledge in the same way you feed yourself food.
Right.
And so, for me, I want for my son that he finds something he's passionate about and that he can fling himself in his purpose and in his passion, that he has a heart to give back and to know that to whom much is given, much is required. But also having a mom who's done the things that I've done, that he's not overwhelmed with thinking he needs to compete with me, right? Or that he has to be a lawyer, or that he has to go to college. Although I want him to go to college and I'm pushing him to go to college, he told me at one point he wanted to do law enforcement. And he's also told me that he may want to get a skill for a trade. And I'm like, well, you can actually do all of those things,
right.
And so trying to help him find his way in a world where my world is so big, mm-hmm. right? Because he's treated differently even because I'm his mom, right? And so.
Which is good and bad, right?
It is, he tells me sometimes more bad.
Yeah.
Because people, there are certain expectations, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because.
Yeah, I have that with my children too. And I try to teach them one-liners, like, if you think it's bad, if you have a bad, you should live with him.
Exactly, exactly, exactly. You better give them to me. I'm going to give them to him. He needs them.
But I will tell you, it's refreshing to hear you in the mother mode of, just as long as he continues to learn, just as long as he continues to, be a lifelong learner and apply
exactly.
those skills to do, there's
something
all this,
he loves. You know what I'm saying?
And there's all these arguments about like, oh, you want kids to follow your dreams. You want them to chase those things. And there's great research that I always adhere back to with people is, it's not about chasing your dreams. It's about finding something you're good at, learning to love it, and then doing great things with it.
Definitely.
Nobody was ever born to be a state senator.
Right. If you would have told me I was going to be a state senator, I would tell you, how did you manage to think that?
That would be a fun exercise for another podcast of if you could go talk to yourself, the 17-year-old version of yourself.
Oh, my gosh.
You probably wouldn't be who you are because that person wouldn't have had that path and
the same,
had to demonstrate
exactly.
that level of resilience to
exactly.
get to where you've
exactly.
gone.
Exactly.
So tell me, what's the last book you read or what are you reading now?
I read the Bible very often. And I'm trying
verse?
To think, if I was to immediately think of a verse, I would probably go with, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. And maybe because I'm in the middle of the budget process and things have been challenging. And we did corrections yesterday and we'll be doing education next. And I think that the pathway to corrections for children of color is too easy in Wisconsin. And so it can sometimes be a lot. And yesterday was one of those days where I felt a little overwhelmed by what our day was like. And so I have to remember that I can do all things through Christ, that, that it'll work out, and to know that he will not put more on me than I can bear.
Yeah.
And so, and then I'm trying to think the most recent book that I got. I can't because most recently the only thing I've been reading is The Budget. So that's my most recent
right.
book.
And that's not a book, that's an encyclopedia set.
Yeah. Exactly. That is a lot. Exactly. Exactly. And so, outside of that, I'm getting a brain freeze. Oh, I know what it was. It was Miss Alexander's book, and Dr. DeGruy's book. Dr. DeGruy's book on the post-traumatic slave syndrome was the most recent book, which really talks about trauma-informed care and epidemiology and the path that African-Americans in particular have had and how it has shaped who they are. And that it changes your brain, the trauma that you've experienced.
Every single day.
So when I hear gunshots and they become normal to me, that is changing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everything about me and the people that are in this community. And that's trauma, right?
Well, I think what's really interesting about a lot of that research is the actual impact on the physical brain itself.
Yes.
And how it hardens.
Yes.
You know, your senses. It makes you incredibly defensive.
Yes.
It makes you very aggressive.
Yes.
And I know that sounds like...
You're telling my story. No, I'm just...
but it's all research. But at the end of the day, it's common sense. If every day you're walking down the street looking over your shoulder, if every day you're afraid to go home because you don't know what's there for you, if every day you go to school or to an environment where you will face challenges and situations that you're not prepared to face, everyone goes to the immediate fight or flight. And with that, this is one of the things I really want to hear from you about today is, you know, what do you think is facing the kids of, you know, and let's talk specific to Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're all over Wisconsin. People always talk in general broad strokes about kids in Wisconsin. But in Milwaukee, in your district, what do you think are the greatest challenges facing the children? And speak please to your love and faith initiative.
I surely will. I think first let me say that I think the challenges that young people have are things that some people take for granted, that they just have every day. You know, I wake up every day and I can turn on my lights. I can use a bathroom. The water is running. I can go to my refrigerator and get something to eat. And my son he's had no experience of living in a place that wasn't his, that we didn't own.
Mm-hmm.
It was his backyard. He didn't have to worry about where to put his items because somebody was going to get them, because it was just me and him, you know? And those are just some basic things that are like a part of what gives you stability. And when you don't have that, it creates something different. And so first of all, because of poverty, there's a lot of that doesn't exist for individuals. And so I often say, you know, I can't hear anything else if I can't hear you over my stomach,
mm-hmm.
you know, saying that I need something to eat. Many kids, normal is not normal.
Right.
I'll use myself as an example. I grew up with a mother who did have expectations on me. Now, my mother was critical, and my mother gave constructive criticism and direction.
I wish everyone could see that the smile on her face as she uses those words.
Exactly. Okay.
Right.
And
that's very kind of you. How you just put that.
And in some places, people didn't get that.
Mm-hmm.
People didn't critique them. They just had their way. And so those are two different extremes. And so to go in an environment, let's say a work environment, where you then have to perform and you're critiqued, some people, it's a lot.
Right.
Other people who have experienced that, it's not. And so without question, right, young people's reality it's very different. And it is consumed with kind of what you articulated before, extreme crisis and trauma constantly. It's their normal.
I think that's something that so many people have, you know, there's ACEs and all of the assessments
mm-hmm.
you can take to see that. But to your point, to go home and you know, not be able to hear over your stomach, to you know,
go to school and not be able to hear over your stomach, and you know, possibly. I mean, I hope that the 45th president doesn't get rid of the funding that is in the farm bill that helps to do the breakfast programs, you know, in schools, or help our seniors, you know, with Meals on Wheels. Because whether it is from the young child who goes to school and needs to hear the teacher over their stomach, or whether it's the senior who is frail and needs that food and isn't able to care for themselves in the same way, that nutrition and food is a huge component, and poverty has consumed. It has consumed so much in access to opportunity. And so one of the things I say is I believe that all our people need, all our kids need, is love and faith. Mm-hmm. But I'm a legislator. I cannot mandate love. And I surely can't mandate faith. And I'd be ran out of town, you know, if that's what I was trying to do. But I believe that that's what people need. And so I use the acronym for the things that I also believe will help to put people on a good path of a healthy life. And one is to deal with literacy. The L in love and faith is literacy. And that literacy is not just what are we reading and can we read, but it's also financial literacy. Mm-hmm. It's literacy of relationships. It's literacy of what's expected in a work area. It's literacy of how do you deal with your health outcomes. And so that literacy piece has to be discussed and understood, and people need to be connected to how to get what they need in order to be more literate, that information. Mm-hmm. But also we need to then help them to know how to take advantage of opportunities that may exist for them, because often people don't know. I jokingly say, if you're a person of faith and you know the story of the Israelites, you know, that's in the Bible, they were 2 weeks away from where they needed to go. It took them 40 years. They needed a connector, an interpreter.
Or a map.
A map, a GPS or something,
but
right?
To your point, direction.
But opportunity that existed for them, they needed to know how to take advantage of that opportunity and how to benefit from it. Whether it is education, whether it is a skill, whether it is a career path, whether it is your health, people need to know what their options are so that they can take action with the information that they're provided through literacy. I also think we need to teach people that action by teaching them to have a voice for themselves. Listen, your doctor can tell you and give you information. You can learn what your options are, the opportunity. But in the end, you have to take action. You have to be that voice for yourself. And I want us to teach people everything from civics to advocacy, mm-hmm. right? And then I really want to connect them to two things. Well, education, right? Employment and entrepreneurship. Those are the E's of love and faith. And the industries that I want to connect them with, the industries I want to connect them with is environmental, forestry. And I pull forestry out of environmental because there's a lot of wood waste around the nation, and to be able to think innovatively about that. Agriculture, because we need food to live, and it actually teaches self-sustainability and job readiness. Don't tell anybody. Right. And then the IT and the trades and health. Those are the industries in the Love and Faith initiative. I think that we should do that in hubs. And those hubs should be in schools, in churches, nonprofits, neighborhood centers, where we create the place where people can go. Instead of going to 15 different places to get what you need, you can go to a hub and get access in a hub. And in those hubs, we should have CHOs. We should have a connector, which is could be a community health worker, but they're the person who says, this is what you, these are your options. You got the information and the options. Now let me help you know how to navigate.
So I love it because when I taught, I had two rules in my class. And they were both around choice.
Okay.
It is your choice to make good choices, and it is your choice to learn or not.
Exactly.
And here, what you're speaking to is, I will engage and empower you with all the knowledge you need, but I can't help you once you walk out the door.
Exactly.
And that, I think, Senator Taylor, is one of the misconceptions across the state of Wisconsin between the difference between what is Milwaukee and what is Wisconsin. And so many people see them as two different things.
Oh, wow. Get a kick right. out of it.
But I'd like you to speak.
Wisconsinites are hard workers, right? Mm-hmm. And that includes Milwaukee. But I will say that the image that people have of Milwaukee, I'll leave it at the feet of media.
Oh, it's propagated every night. Every night when they show,
I'm like, come and exactly
whatever.
Come and show the other stuff, mm-hmm. you know, and inundate people with that because that is the story, right?
Right.
They say what bleeds sells or whatever. Only because that's what you've decided is what you want to sell.
Right, right. There's so many great things that happen every single day that are
exactly.
overlooked. So help me with this. So you were talking about literacy, and there's two literacy components that I think are often missed. And how can you as a senator or the state promote social and cultural literacy?
Mm.
And one of my themes is always empathy, because mm-hmm. I think the best quality of leaders, and this is just my opinion, is to be empathetic to the person in front of them.
It is because you have
situation.
You have to be able to realize, and this goes to what I said before, my normal is not your normal. And it's not somebody else's normal. And our normal may be more alike than somebody else's normal.
Yeah, my normal is so abnormal you don't want
to. Well, I jokingly say it, but it's true. But think of this. So my normal and my brother's normal, right,
mm-hmm.
weren't even the same.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the mother that I had was different than when my brother came along. And so I had to be the cover or the bridge over those troubled waters that my mother had. So if we aren't empathetic enough to realize that the lens that I see things through is from my experience, because I didn't have the experience does not mean that somebody else's lens is different.
Mm-hmm.
Now, their lens may not be a normal that the larger society accepts, and they have to be literate about that. So you have to put people in a environment for them to learn. But it's something you said that's so true. They have to make the choice to be willing, right, to learn. It's one of the reasons with the Love and Faith Initiative that I'd love to see us have the hubs in neighborhoods that are mapped based on where the need is. So if we have an area of the city that doesn't have a number of nonprofits, has a high number of young people, and a high amount of, let's say, crime, I'd love for that hub to be a hub where people can go and do work, and the work that the glue that I love it to be is around growing food.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that now when we're growing that food and we're doing that work, that we're having a conversation about those other things.
Right.
You're learning, but you don't even realize you're learning. And you're
right.
learning about different normals in right. that process. And I think that should happen with individuals coming to the hub that need the services and people that want to volunteer.
Right.
It actually gives a way and a place, right, for people who want to help, but you don't know how to help.
Right.
You know, you don't know where to go.
Right.
Or maybe you're afraid.
Well, and again, to your point, you don't know how. You've never been empowered. So it's about direction and showing you the way. You can mm-hmm. be lost for 40 years in the desert.
Exactly. You need a connector.
Or apparently you can come to Senator Taylor's office
and get connected.
And get where you
That's
need
it.
To go.
We're connectors around here.
I'll tell you what. I think every state senator in the state of Wisconsin should spend an hour here.
You know what?
Because it would change the perception of, I think, both... what they view as the reality of the region,
mm-hmm.
you, and get them connected in different ways. I mean, every part of Wisconsin has poverty. Every part of Wisconsin has trauma. But to your point, it's getting to know the stories of the different people who
exactly.
walk through the door in an effort to make their life better, which I believe is the charge of every elected official, because you're servants.
Exactly, but everybody doesn't see it. And, you know, often people will introduce me or others, you know, as a politician and say, excuse me, I'm not a politician. I'm a public servant.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody doesn't approach it in that
right.
perspective. I see very much. I honestly, if I could be honest with you, I see my job as a senator also as ministry. And so it's part of the reason why for me, I feel like I'm here to serve. Not from a, you know, overly religious or spiritual perspective, but that it is part of my work. It's the rent I pay.
Right. That's a really good point, because there's three kinds of teachers. The one who pull up and like, oh, I got to teach today.
Mm-hmm.
The one who pulls up and like, I got a great lesson today. And the one who pulls up and says, I'm here to change the world.
Bam.
You sound like
exactly.
Three. So tell me a little bit about what you see is the future of kids in Wisconsin.
You know, some days I worry because Wisconsin has always invested in education, and we have not invested the way that we need. And as a result of that, whether it is K through 12 or it's our UW system, we're losing some ground. And even during the Depression, we invested in education. And I'm not saying that we haven't invested, but we have taken more from our investment in education than, I mean, the largest cuts in our state's history have been under our present governor. And so now in the budget process, I'm concerned about their future if we don't do things like, for example, we have a problem with literacy in our state. Their future is them. Because if you can't read, you can't learn if we don't address the issue. So their future is bright if we invest in them and make sure that they have a pathway in order to be able to compete with the world. And they have to be able to read in order to be able to do that. We need to change, very candidly, the concept of making young people believe that there's only one way for them to go. We have to expose them. I believe that you don't know if you don't know. My grandmother used to say, you don't know if you don't know that you don't know. And I used to think, why does she keep saying that?
Yeah, well, she's Socrates, Socrates, Plato, who is she? Yeah,
but it is so real. Now that I think on it, if I don't know, and I don't realize I don't know, I don't know.
Right. There's a great saying that when you first go on a journey, you don't know what you don't know. And then you know what you don't know. And eventually you don't even know what you know anymore because you know it all.
And except you never really get to knowing it all. Right, because right. The truth of the matter is there's always some more to a journey, right?
Or you run into grandma who throws you right back to the beginning of the loop.
And right, it makes you realize, baby, I've been living longer than you.
Right. So what advice do you have for parents? Based upon your experiences or the challenges that you see?
I immediately think of my mom when you ask, what advice do I have for parents? And I think the first is to remember that we did not come with instructions, meaning the kids, and that you were attached to them. There doesn't come a time that stops. And to be their parent, and I'm not suggesting that you can't be loving and friendly, but you're not there to be their friend. You're there to be their parent and guide and direct them. And so don't forget that that means that love also means tough love. And I can't say that enough, that I want parents to remember to parent, right? And I want parents also to remember that we can only do the best that we can with who we are and where we are and in the moment in time that we're going through our journey. So don't beat yourself up. They're going to live. They're going to make it through. You're going to make it through. They're resilient. And then lastly, expose them. Expose them to what you don't know and to people who can help them know what you never knew, and expose them to what you know so that literally the sky can be the limit for them. It truly is what I believe my mother gave. My mother dreamed for me when I had no dreams for myself. And that's really what I'm saying. And she connected me with the people who could help me be literate on what my options and my opportunities were. You know, that's love, right?
Yeah, well, like you said, she filled out that application. You showed up at UW, you don't even know how it happened.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But again, I think that's the combination of what you described, because, you know, again, my experience is education. I find that the best parents, single, dual, split, foster, whatever, hold the child at the center of the family, but then hold them accountable.
Exactly.
And what I see the collapse in recent years is that too often the parent has catered to what social media is driving for their children and backed off on those social pressures. And when we talk about breaking some of the cycles of poverty or breaking some of the cycles of situations, the number one indicator of success is going to be some strong matriarch or patriarch in that child's mm-hmm. life, uncle, aunt, mother, grandmother, grandfather, whoever,
exactly,
and creating a clear pathway for them.
And you know, I gave a speech to some eighth graders and I told them, even in your parents' brokenness, they still have value, and it's important to respect that. You know, even in my mother's lowest moments, there were still lessons, including the lessons of what not to do. Mm-hmm. And I used that as in a positive way instead of in a negative way. And still gave respect even in her lowest times. And as a result of that, I think it also made it easier to heal as she healed. But I am everything that I am because of parents who had expectations. And I think if I was to say one last thing, to have parenting to me is to have expectations.
Right.
It's that tough love thing.
Yeah. Right. And I think everyone, when they're faced with that trauma, and everybody's had it at different levels, in those moments, you can either succumb or overcome.
Exactly.
And that's my message always to kids, is that, you know, through the help of others, not leaning on, but being held,
mm-hmm.
that you find those things.
I tell them, I use Donnie McClurkin, and he has a song. And in the song, he says, "We fall down, but we get up." And I basically the same message. And I also tell individuals, for me, because as a woman of faith, I fall on my knees and I use my relationship with God to, you know, really help me. But, you know, I tell them in the end, look, I wish I could tell you life is going to be easy. I wish I could tell you it's not going to beat you up. It is. Mm-hmm. And you're going to fall.
Mm-hmm.
But the question is, how do you handle it?
Yeah.
In your worst moments, how do you handle it? And you got to get up.
One of my favorite Japanese sayings is fall 7, stand 8.
Okay. Love it.
Yeah.
Love it.
So last question for you.
Okay. Because
this has been a ton of fun.
I agree.
Where do you want to see us described 5 years from now?
Wow. I want us to not have the worst achievement gap for students of color. I want us to have standards for reading so that we can do better across the board. I want us not to be number one in the nation for suspensions for all kids. It's the one place that we don't discriminate, in Milwaukee in particular. I want us to be healthier and happier and have incorporated farm to school in urban and rural centers, because I believe it's the cure, the coalition of urban and rural engaged people, right? Those are some of the things that jump out, right, at me. I want Milwaukee to have a different image, or at least be on the path, right, to having a different image. And I'm hoping that CESAs can have a role in helping us to build that hub, that resource, that connection for schools and communities, business and individuals and nonprofits and all of that alike, to be able to be a better resource to create those hubs in districts and in schools to help people to navigate.
Look at you. I didn't even ask you to plug it, and you did. So thank you.
But it is what I want.
But here's the deal. Like, sitting here with you, you know, and you probably heard the lawnmower and the weed eater.
Exactly.
But this is a busy place, and I will tell you what, there's an air of optimism when you're in your presence, and I really appreciate that, and I appreciate your advocacy for kids, and especially kids in a setting like the north side of Milwaukee, my birthplace here, and everything that you do every single day. So thank you very much for joining us on the Smart Thinking Podcast, and I wish you the best of luck as you move forward.
Thank you, and thank you for doing this. This is amazing.
Yeah, it was fun. Thank
you. All right.
It seems these days blue's covered up in a cloud and a blanket of grays. And I know it's fine, but I feel a lot better with you in a bottle of wine. Every color's faded, everyone is waiting on. There's a song horizon, just you wait and see. Won't you take